Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q2 FY24 earnings conference call of Tata Consumer Products Limited, hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manoj Menon from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you.
Hey, wonderful. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone who's there on the call today. At ICICI Securities, it's our absolute pleasure once again to host the results conference call of Tata Consumer Limited. Over to Nidhi from the management team for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Manoj, and thanks for hosting us. Welcome, everyone. As usual, I have in the room with me Mr. Sunil D'Souza, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. L. Krishnakumar, Executive Director and Group CFO, and Mr. Ajit Krishnakumar, Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer. In terms of format, we'll spend about 15 minutes where Sunil will give you a quick overview of our results and performance during the second quarter, and then we'll open the floor for Q&A. I'd just like to draw your attention to the disclaimer statement which is visible on your screen. With that, over to you, Sunil.
Thanks, Nidhi. Before I start off the call, just wanted to highlight that officially we've announced LKK's retirement effective today. But that said, as we are in the process of inducting his successor, LK will stay on with us to make sure the successor lands on his two feet and after that is in a stable position. So as of now, for all practical purposes, you can continue to treat LK as the go-to person for all things finance. With that, I go to the executive summary. We delivered a strong quarter with 11% top-line growth, 10% in constant currency. The four-year revenue CAGR is now 12% in Q2 FY24. India beverages grew 8%, with tea volumes up 3%. NourishCo grew 25%. NourishCo first half is up 44%. India foods up 16%, volumes up 6%. Tata Sampann was up 47%. International business came to the party big time this time. 13% revenue growth, 8% in constant currency with EBIT growth of 60%. We continued momentum in India growth, combined grew for 39%, and they moved from 15%-18% contribution to India business during the quarter. EBITDA grew 30%. The margin expanded by 220 basis points, primarily driven by improved profitability in international and non-branded. On a MAT basis, our salt and tea businesses saw marginal share loss, and I'll come to the shares when we talk specifically on those slides. Innovation is now 5.5%, while we have guided for a full year of 5%. This is the second quarter in a row that we've exceeded that. We've achieved new milestone in our S&D journey. We had committed saying that we will have split routes in all 1 million-plus towns, and substantially in all 1 million-plus towns, we do have it. On top of that, we have direct distributors now in all 50,000-plus towns. Just as a perspective, during that time, there was a little bit of a blip, and you would have seen some moments in the total numeric reach number, but now that the infrastructure is in place, now execution in these places will be the focus, and in addition, we will move beyond the 50,000 population to start expanding more into the rural spaces. We also announced the amalgamation of our wholly owned subsidiaries, which is NourishCo, Tata Consumer Soulfull, and Tata SmartFoodz with the parent entity. We do expect to see synergies in terms of back-end and more in terms of direct and indirect tax synergies. Business snapshot, I talked about India beverages, 3% volume, 8% revenue. India foods, 6% volume, 16% revenue. U.S. coffee was soft. Just as a perspective, the volume softness, when you look at it, we have already mentioned that it was to do with the pack price architecture, where we've de-gram packs to hit price points, and that's why you'll see volume -13%, revenue -7%. International tea, 15% volume and 30% revenue. Ex acquisitions -5% and +16%. Tata Coffee, while volume was soft, primarily driven by plantations, revenue was up 2%, and consolidated all-in 11% revenue growth at 3,734. Next slide. If I move to, so 3,734, which is 11% growth on the top line, 569 crores, which is a 30% growth on EBITDA, PBT up 36% at 505 crores. Group net profit -7%. I would just like to highlight that we had a one-time gain of 147 crores on sale of land in Tata Coffee last year, which was an exceptional item. So that is why this shows a negative. But if excluding exceptional items, the growth is 24% in group net profit. And we are sitting with 2,500 crores of cash. In the same quarter last year, it was about 2,000 crores. Against the strategic priorities, I'll straight move into the distribution slide. We had committed 4 million by September 2023. We are more or less there. It was 3.9. It's moved down to 3.8 as we've actually rejigged below the lower pop strata, replacing sub-distributors in 50,000 towns with distributors. Like I said, we do believe right thing to do, and it sets us up well for the future because now we will focus on building a super stockist and rural distributor/sub-distributor in pop strata below. We'll come out with a specific target of which pop strata and how many distributors are we looking at very shortly. Direct reach continues to be strong at 1.5 million. We've implemented the split and the 50,000+ distributors that we commented. Modern trade continues strong growth, exceeding the India growth number, overall India growth numbers, and e-commerce continues on a strong wicket with a 33% growth. India business, A&P continued to be high at 6.7%. We have powered up our brands. Now, just wanted to make a statement on tea. The shares that you see out here are MAT. On a quarter-to-quarter, it's almost flat, and just wanted to highlight that you normally see blips in market shares as tea prices come down. They are more or less stable right now, and we do believe, given both distribution expansion that we are doing along with powering brand, we will get back the tea share quickly. Quarter-on-quarter, the tea share is stable. Salt, it's a mathematical exercise. We were the first off the curve last year when we started taking up price. Over the last 12 months, various other competitors have come up in price, so the whole value table has gone up, and therefore you see the value share loss out here. But just as a perspective, now that we are cycling one full year, we see stability in prices. In September, we hit a 38 share, which is a 12-month high, and we do believe now that prices are stable, we will start getting back to our standard share gain trajectory. Just wanted to highlight that 3 years back when we took over, this share was 30, and we are now September, for the month of September, we exited at 38. We continued the momentum on innovation, pilot launch of energy product, sports drink. We've launched decoction, ready-to-pour decoction, launches in tea, value-added teas. GoFit saw an expansion with apple cider vinegar. Soulful, which is our play in breakfast, mini meals and snacking, having completed the breakfast portfolio, we are now starting to expand into snacking. This is the first of what I would say many more to come. Simply Better cold press oils, we launched it on Amazon Prime Day and it is off to a fantastic start online. We've entered a significant category with vermicelli and off to a very good start both on the top line as well as the margin front relatively in Sampann terms. Walnuts and seeds was our expansion in dry fruits. We've rejigged our mixes and we're now playing in the dessert mixes with the gulab jamun mix, which again has started to do well. We had launched Himalayan saffron last quarter at the very high end with a QR code, etc. Now we've entered the mid-range play also with Tata Sampann saffron. Momentum continues in the engines of growth, growing 39%, now moving from 15% to 18% contribution to the India business. We've reaffirmed our commitment to sustainability, and just as a perspective, it is not 2030 and 2040. We put out very, very specific targets for FY25-26 on climate, circular economy and people and community. In terms of business performance, India Packaged Beverages, MAT share, I talked about minus 95 bps, but on a quarter-to-quarter basis, it's stable. Volume growth of 3% and value now ahead of volume as our premiumization efforts continue to play out. Coffee, incidentally, grew 17% during the quarter. Next slide. India Foods, salt, I talked about the mathematical market share of salt. Overall, value-added salts are 6.6% of our portfolio, continue to climb. Overall foods growth of 6, revenue growth of 16. Sampan had a strong quarter at 47. That said, I'll guide you back to what we have said. Our long-term aspiration is a 30% growth in Sampan. Nourishco, strong quarter, 25% revenue growth and 172 crores of revenue. We remain on track for the aspirational target of 1,000 crores for the full quarter. Just as a perspective, for the first half, we would have grown 44% despite unfavorable weather. Tata Coffee, extractions grew 11, and the stellar performance here was Vietnam, where we had a fantastic price mix realization which contributed to the profitability. Revenue growth was plus 1, plantation was minus 11 as buyers hold off a bit when they see coffee prices coming off. Starbucks, we opened 22 net new stores, 24 minus 2 is the number. Now we are in 370 stores in 49 cities and Starbucks grew 14%. The focus remains on accelerating store growth so that we take full opportunity of the long-term out-of-home coffee consumption story in India. International operations, UK on a very strong wicket with the entire rejigging of costs, with the relaunch of Tetley in the most sustainable pack, putting A&P behind it, revenue growth of 13%, black tea share of 19.5%. But what I'd like to point out is the fact that we have always mentioned that the opportunities in fruit and herbal and speciality, and we've been focusing on that with Good Earth and Tetley, and now fruit and herbal in the month of September, we've got a 10% market share. US, a little bit of a work to do as coffee prices are coming off and promotional intensity starts heating up. We put in correction and actions late in the quarter, which should start reflecting in this quarter, but overall more or less maintaining market share, but revenue is a bit soft. Canada, the Starina portfolio continues to deliver 8% revenue growth and 28% overall market share. In terms of financial performance, over to LK.
Thanks, Anil, and morning, everyone. As Anil mentioned, it was a strong quarter. We grew 11% in top line, 10% in constant currency. India business grew by 11%, and within that, we had India beverages growing by 8%, food by 16%, and overall, the growth portfolio grew by almost 40%. In terms of the international business, the growth was 8%. Flat to marginally positive if you take out the acquisition. But within that, UK saw good growth compared to the same period in the previous year. Non-branded business grew 3%. In terms of EBITDA, we had strong increase of 30% and with an improving EBITDA margin. India business EBITDA grew proportional to turnover. EBITDA margin at 15.7% was in line with the previous year. International business EBITDA growth was driven by pricing interventions and also saving from restructuring we did in different markets. But the major improvement was in the UK business. The increase in EBITDA for the non-branded primarily reflects high prices of coffee, but also some amount of inflation coming down on freight and other logistics costs, which were high in the previous year because of supply constraints and inflation. For the half year, similar trend, not very different in terms of fallout. Consolidated revenue grew by 12% and EBITDA grew by 24%. Moving on to the actual SEBI format, just want to draw your attention to a few points. We've talked about revenue and EBITDA. Talking about exceptional items, we have in this quarter a charge of 15 crores on restructuring costs. In the previous year, we had the impact of the sale of property, so we had a significant exceptional income, which is not there. Hence, we are seeing that the growth in PAT is lower at 359 versus 355. The group net profit after associates is also lower because if you look at the format, you'll see the share of profit or loss from associates is lower than the same period in the previous year, mainly due to our North India plantation, which had an adverse impact both on account of crop and prices. The trend for the half year is similar, 12% top line growth, EBIT growth of 25%, PBT before exception 29%, and lower growth of group net profit at 5%. Moving on to the standalone, and standalone really reflects our tea business and the foods business. We had 11% top line growth in the quarter and 17% improvement in PAT. Just to mention that the standalone also has some portions of our non-branded business, which is the tea extraction. There is also other income from investment and others, which is in the standalone. On a year-to-date basis, revenue from operations 11% up and PAT up by 20%. Moving on to segment performance for the quarter, revenue up 11%, we talked about that. In terms of segment results, we've seen a 7% change compared to a higher EBITDA number we talked about in the past. The reason for this being lowered is because we wrote off some assets which were obsolete and were not being used. So there was some amount of one-time charge that we took. So you see the depreciation is slightly higher in this quarter. That's the reason for lower growth in the segment result compared to what you see elsewhere in the presentation. International business improvement we said is primarily because of UK. To some extent, other markets also had marginal improvements, but UK and inclusion of Jokers resulted in a 60% improvement in EBIT. Non-branded improvement primarily reflects the higher prices, but there's also an element of sale of timber of 5 to 7 crores that is included in the results. Segment revenue 72% from India, 28% from international business. In terms of profitability, India business slightly higher at 78 versus 22 for international. But as we said, the outlook for international in the medium term is to keep improving the EBITDA margin so that the difference is catching up. In terms of the half-year performance, no additional call-outs. The proportion of revenue is 73 and 27 and EBIT is 76 and 24. That's it from our side. Over to Sunil.
Yeah, so in terms of, if I conclude, we've seen a stable demand trend in India and we remain cautiously optimistic and continuing our momentum. We see demand headwinds in our international markets, even as we've delivered a competitive performance, and we remain confident that we can continue to deliver. In terms of the business, we again delivered a double-digit top-line growth with EBITDA margin expansions. The interventions that we put in for our India tea business continue to yield results. This is the third consecutive quarter of volume-led growth. Salt, despite the price increases, we've seen volume growth and continued premiumization. And we do expect that now that we've got stable pricing and we've built out more infrastructure for distribution, we'll continue to drive volumes. Growth businesses are on a very, very strong trajectory. JV Starbucks now has 370 stores across 49 cities. International business, we have taken structural interventions and pricing actions which have now started to deliver margins. As I said, the US is the only place where we've got to tweak in the short term right now. And we've started to put money back into A&P to strengthen brands so that we move from a push-based model to a pull-based model internationally. On the NCLT approvals, we're waiting for the final approvals to come through. The hearings are all through. And post obtaining those approvals, we expect to complete the merger of Tata Coffee business in this financial year. With that, back to you, Nidhi.
Thanks, Anil. Moderator, we can go to the Q&A queue.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have a first question from the line of Abneesh Roy from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congrats on the very good set of numbers. My first question is on your energy drink and sports drink. So, 10 rupee price point with a very different brand name, Say Never. Wanted to understand, does this compete with the 20 rupee price point energy drink of cola companies? Cola companies have seen spectacular success, but your pricing is half of that. So will this compete against that product? Is it largely similar but smaller quantity? And in terms of distribution, cola companies have very strong distribution in this kind of a channel. How do you intend to compete if you want to take it pan India and big? How do you intend to compete in this?
So thanks, Abneesh. I go back to the fundamental premise of acquisition of NourishCo, which was that we had a good team and a good base infrastructure, and we needed geographical and portfolio expansion. We are in the process of geographical expansion. We've up to 44 plants now, and portfolio we're expanding. We've got juice and jelly, we've got jelly drinks, and now we're just starting to dip our toes exactly into what you said, the big emerging energy market. Now, just as a perspective, you're absolutely right. The cola companies are priced at, if I'm not mistaken, 20, in some cases 15 for a different serving size. Our whole logic is that of the cup format. The cup format does two things for us. A, it is a lower packaging cost, and B, because we are distributed manufacturing, our freight cost is low, and therefore we are able, and of course it's a smaller serving size, and therefore we are able to hit a price point. We've launched it in very limited geographies right now to test the concept to see if it works. We are quite confident that it will, and if it works, then we'll come out with a full-fledged plan on how to expand it across all the geographies. We're still not national. I would say we're about 75-80% of the country in terms of coverage, and that's where we will play. Where we have cup lines, we will come back with an exact plan on how to play it. Early days, I would say wait and watch.
Sure. My second question is on the NourishCo and India modern trade. You have done well in most other parts of business. But when I see NourishCo, it seems much lower than the run rate which you are having. So 60% growth in Q1, dropping to 25%, which is a very big drop. Similarly, India modern trade first quarter growth was 22%. Q2, you have not given number, but my sense is around mid-single digit. So why is there such a drop? Is there any impact of, say, the festival shifting in the modern trade? Is that the reason? But I don't see that impacting your e-commerce business. In fact, your e-commerce business in India has accelerated significantly in Q2 versus Q1. So if you could explain all these three aspects.
So Abneesh, let me answer your second question first. The reason, absolutely, as you pointed out, for modern trade is a bit of shift of festivals, because normally modern trade loads up about 15-20 days prior to the festival dates, and there has been a shift, decent amount of shift this year in the festival date. So we do expect this quarter modern trade to pick up quite well. I don't think there is anything else to it, because market share wise we are maintaining market share across all the categories that we play in. E-commerce would have performed better for two reasons. A is there is not as much loading into the warehouses as modern trade does. And the second piece is that there is a significant amount of new launches that we are playing only online, and it is not even in modern trade and e-commerce. For example, GoFit, ACV, a lot of the dry fruits, etc. is primarily online. That would be the other factor. But the bigger factor would be exactly what you said, is the shift of festival date. So that's the answer to your question number two. On question number one, it is primarily to do with weather. While we did push on despite inclement weather in the first quarter, we had blips in the second quarter when you had unseasonal rains, etc., which continued beyond their normal date. But like I said, we had said we are setting out an aspirational target of 1,000 crores for NourishCo for the full year. And right now, we remain committed to that.
Sure. My last quick question is on Tata Sampann. So most of your products in Sampann are in terms of more on health and more on fiber, etc. For example, your pulses, etc. clearly on that. Also seeds and nuts, all are on health platform. When I see your latest launch of the Gulab Jamun mix, it seems a bit different. So will it work? I understand the overall mother brand strategy, but having a dessert brand against a healthy pulses and healthy nuts and fruits, will it work?
So let me step back. Abneesh, Tata Sampann is a pantry brand, right? Yes, and most of the categories that we have chosen to play in are on the healthy side. But if I look at the specific category of mixes, when you distill the entire opportunity out there in the mixes segment per se, you will see that there is a significant amount of opportunity out there in dessert mixes, which we were leaving it out on the table. So this is our first, if I say, launch and learn experiment of launching a Gulab Jamun mix into the trade. Also, this is a very, very seasonal product. So that's why we've launched it about a month and a half before Diwali to test it out. If this works, then we will have to step back and look at our whole portfolio play and see what tweaks do we need to make.
So thanks. That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to answer queries from all participants, please restrict your questions to two at a time. You may join back the queue for follow-up questions. We'll take our next question from the line of Manoj Menon from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Sunil, just wanted a bit of a macro marketing perspective from you. So when I broadly look at the revenue performance, particularly volume performance of consumer staples, there is a very clear divergence between food companies and the home and personal care. Well, there are certain, hypotheses which I do have, but just wanted to pick your brain, on, what are those drivers which you are witnessing and how do you see this trajectory? Can it even accelerate food versus HPC?
So Manoj, I would not comment on broader macroeconomics and other companies. All I can say is we see a huge runway, whether it is in tea, whether it is in salt, whether it is in Sampann, Soulful, everything. We remain focused on our categories. We remain on focus on what we can control and what we can't. We make sure we've got adequate actions to make course corrections. In tea, we've always said that we see a long-term growth of 5%. We are slightly short of that. We're better than where we were a year ago, where it was in a decline. We do see a little bit of stress on rural, and you see every FMCG company commenting upon it. There we have seen an effect of inflation, we've seen an effect of erratic monsoons, we've seen an uptick on Manrega. But that said, again, we've seen a jump in two-wheeler sales as of late, so we remain cautiously optimistic out there. On salt, again, we've guided for a mid-single-digit volume growth, and we are more or less inching towards that being faster coming towards that than the beverages space. Sampann, we have always said, will grow 30%. Soulful is a wide space. It's for us to play. We moved from breakfast to snacking, and now I think you'll see us expanding our TAM and growing far faster. So I do hear various chatter from various different people, but I would not comment on it without knowing the details there.
Fair enough, sir. Secondly, on the distribution bit, good work by the team till now. Would you be able to give us some quantification of the growth from the sales vector which you have got, in the last 3 to 5 years? And how do you see some quantification on how do you see this into the medium term also, in volume terms?
In terms of where are we getting the growth from, Manoj, so actually speaking, while everyone is talking about rural stress, and we do think there is a little bit of that still left out there, for us, rural is an opportunity where we are expanding the distribution, and therefore for us internally, rural growth, urban growth is working out to almost the same in percentage terms. That's number one. Number two, where we had done split routes in urban areas with the hypothesis being that we will expand the bandwidth at the front end and therefore be able to drive depth in the outlets rather than width. We are seeing that with decent increase in lines and therefore growth rates on split routes versus non-split. 50,000 plus towns, which was our depth, which was our width expansion in rural, semi-urban and rural. Early days, encouraging signs, but the reason why we are confident is because now we are going to step out beyond the 50,000 plus. On tea volumes itself, Manoj, I think for the last, about 3 quarters, we've been seeing about 3% plus volume growth. We had seen a little bit of an upsurge on local regional brands, but now, like I said, once tea prices are more or less stable, it boils down to branding and execution, and we remain confident that we should be able to equal, if not exceed, this number towards our midterm aspiration as we go forward.
Understood, sir. Just quickly, if I may, on the salt business, given the limited operating history which we have, where will you put the category, strength or let's say your brand strength, in terms of linkages to commodities? What I'm trying to understand is, let's say if I look at businesses like soaps, for example, or a Parico's Parachute, while there is a, it's not brands, but let's say Lux is a brand, but there is a commodity linkage where there is a necessity to drop prices or, let's say manage a profit pool appropriately, else you lose market share. But let's say in a salt business, in a scenario of which may happen at some point in time, of let's say lower input cost, where will you put the price retention power or the profit pool actually can expand or not?
So Manoj, let me put it this way. Normally, price elasticity comes when there are substitutes. The good news is there is no substitute for salt, and therefore it's got a moat of its own. It's not that people can eat less or use less of salt, unlike most of the other categories which you mentioned, which includes various factors, number one. Number two, if you look at the cost of salt, is primarily determined by two things. Number one is the cost of brine, rather three things, cost of brine, cost of fuel, and logistics, right? Now, if you presume that cost of brine and logistics is equal for everyone, the only place where I am slightly off is cost of energy for conversion, because we use coal and more or less imported coal. So it's a dollar denominated and price of international coal. But that is not a very, very significant portion of my mix. And therefore, we will continue to be not insulated per se, but relatively lesser impacted with movement in commodities. That's number two. Number three, with a 38% share, we have the strength to move the market. Like last year when we took up the pricing, historically this company has never taken beyond a 1 rupee, and at one shot, I think in two quick moves, we moved out 5 rupees. The reason is because we were confident, A, of the brand, B, of the fact that what is hitting us is hitting everyone else, and see the fact that we can execute as well, if not better than everyone else in the market. And that is why you see, despite taking that steep price increase, we've more or less maintained market share. Yeah, there have been small movements, but like I said, September is back to 38, which is again a 12-month high, and we expect to keep this trajectory going.
Super. Thank you, Sunil. I do remember last year, noting that very few brands can actually have 35-30% price growth and still have volume growth. Good luck, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sunil, and congrats on a good set of numbers. My question is on the growth businesses, which are high teens percentage of your India business. So can you give a little more color on that as to what is the profitability of this business, point one? Or rather, I should say, point one is, what is the breakup of that? If you can, we don't want exact numbers, but some color on the breakup of this business between pulses, spices, Nourish Core numbers you give, but whatever else remains in this. We did a calculation last quarter where we said that since this business is probably not making profit right now, the rest of the portfolio actually has seen like a 200 basis points margin expansion versus 4 years ago, which is not very visible in the reported numbers. I think probably it might help if you also sort of highlight this to investors, that the EBITDA margin expansion is actually much higher than what it seems if you adjust for the growth business. So sorry for the long question, but to sum it up, do you think that as this business grows bigger, it will have a negative mix impact on the overall sort of India business? Or do you think that the recovery in margin of these businesses itself should nullify the negative mix impact going ahead?
Tata Consumer Products was built for growth. And when I say growth, it is, we've always said double-digit top-line growth and improving EBITDA. We are acutely conscious of the fact that we are behind many of our listed FMCG peers in terms of EBITDA margins, and therefore you would see us continuing to deliver EBITDA gains. Now, the mathematical formula, the way it works is more or less we built out the fixed cost. There is not going to be a significant increase, and therefore whatever comes in terms of gross margin, I would say margin after promotions at the top will flow to the bottom. So we manage the India business as a whole to make sure that we're delivering this. And therefore you'll find different puts and takes across different businesses from time to time. Now that said, the growth businesses are very high growth rates. And if I look at the three businesses that we classify today as growth, the NourishCo, Smart Foods, four businesses, NourishCo, Smart Foods, Sampann, and Soulful, I would say broadly NourishCo, Soulful, and even Smart Foods, broadly percentage margins are in the range of our India-based business. Sampann would be a little bit behind, probably because of the categories that we play in. And this is a mix to manage for us to deliver the total India business P&L. Yes, even if within Sampann, if you slice and dice it, spices should be higher than our base business. Today, we're still building it out. Mixes should be higher than our base business. Pulses would be slightly short of that. Now, that's number one. Number two, sequentially over the last 3 years or so, we've improved the margins in all the Sampann categories while growing the top line significantly. Number two, as we are growing these businesses, we are very, very clear we are playing for the future. It's not a number for every quarter. And therefore, we are putting A&P far ahead of the curve in all these businesses. So NourishCo, for example, today if I turn off the tap, I am profitable. But will I turn it off? No, because I think there is a substantial headroom for growth. Similarly with Soulful, if you turn off the A&P tap, we are profitable. So, but we are not playing this game for the next 1 quarter or 1 year. We see a substantial runway for growth. Sampann is the entire pantry space is open, and today, actually speaking, we are heading towards close to 900 to 1,000 crores in Sampann for the full year. And that's, we built this in roughly about, what, 3.5 years? Similarly in NourishCo. So I would not want to slice and dice it saying, you know, should I put on the brakes on this business so that my margin... The game is to continue to deliver double-digit top line and improved EBITDA margins. So therefore, you will see EBITDA margins improving. This quarter, for example, compared to last quarter, we've improved 200 bps plus on last year's same quarter, 200 bps plus of EBITDA margins while delivering growth. Yeah? So that would remain the objective.
Very helpful. Sunil, just a quick follow-up on this. On the tea business in India, when you look at your EBITDA margins, and I'm not asking for the figure, but just when you internally look at it and compare it with, let's say, best-in-class tea margins across competitors in India, do you think you're more or less there, or do you think you still have some catch-up to do according to you?
So, Percy, I would say not probably the right way to look at it, and there's specific reason why, right? I would look at margin after promotion expenses and not at the EBITDA, because when in the EBITDA pieces, you load various middle of the P&L, and depending on your scale and leverage on your fixed costs, you will have a different output there. But the margin after promotion expenses, I would say we're in the ballpark. We're still not there, but we're in the ballpark of most of our big competitors. EBITDA percentage margins, we will be lower because the center of the P&L, some of the larger players have got significant leverage on costs, which we don't. LK, you want to add anything?
I just wanted to say that just one point, which I guess all of you are aware, that relative comparison of our portfolio versus our key competitor, I think there is scope for us to premiumize, and we are doing that fairly rapidly, and we have been making good progress in South. So I think for us, there is some scope for improvement from where we are. It's the only message I want to leave, because there is greater opportunity for us to premiumize and win in certain markets where relative share is probably lower. So that's an upside for us.
Yeah. So just to add to what LK said, our strength is mass to mass premium, whereas if you look at our key competitor, the strength is from mass premium to premium. So slightly higher revenue, and therefore, even while percentage margin remains the same, in absolute rupees, it is slightly higher. I would say about 10%-12% higher numeric distribution, and therefore ability to spread costs faster. And because of the larger portfolio, their central fixed costs, et cetera, the leverage that you'll get, which will translate into EBITDA percentage, we would be slightly behind. That said, that is why the whole objective is to continue to grow rapidly while maintaining fixed costs, so that we also come into the same ballpark.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Tejas Shah from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity and great set numbers. So my first question is an extension of one of the previous participants' questions, only that we have shown very good execution on our numeric distribution expansion, both on direct and indirect. But when we see as an outsider, how should we see this lever? Is it a growth lever, or is it just a necessary condition but not a sufficient condition to kind of connect with the growth itself?
So Tejas, I would say it's a necessary but not sufficient condition for two, three reasons, right? A, total universe, 8-9 million outlets. You take your pick from whose numbers you choose. If you look at tea, as defined, it's about available in about 6 million outlets plus per se, and I'm talking about my total reach being about 4. So there is still a significant amount of, and we would be about 2.8-2.9 million only for tea. So there is still, I mean, half the way still to go. That's number two. Number three is, even if you reach there, the question is, how well are you executed in terms of your lines, in terms of your displays in the outlets, in terms of the right packs being available? That's a long way to go. So it is work in process. I like the word that you use, necessary but not sufficient. We've got to 4 million. Now that in that 4 million, we've got to improve, but we've also got to go beyond the 4 million. So that is why you'll see us doing these various different items of whether it is split routes, whether it is direct distributors up to 50,000, below 50,000, now starting to expand rural and sub-distributor, or we're in the middle of rejigging our entire SFA and DMS. We will probably be, what I would say, best in class by exit for this year on the front-end DMS SFA, which would then enable pinpointed execution by outlet.
Got it. Second question is on the acceptability curve of NPD when it moves across channels. So, for example, you said that a lot of our launches are now focused on online. So, let's say when we do something on online and it works there, and when you transcend the channel, you move it to MT and then MT to GT, does the acceptability curve remains the same or it drops materially? And how it happens vice versa? Let's say you started something with GT and the acceptability is very high on MT and online. How does that work?
So Tejas, let me say, I see more of launches online than going to MT and GT rather than vice versa. I don't think we would see that other way around. Why? Because it's very easy to launch online addressing target consumer of one, right? I mean, I can talk to every single target consumer one-on-one. That's A. And B, like I like to use this term to beat up my sales guys, saying, when it is only the consumer and me, which is online, that is when the power of the brand comes in. After that, it is your execution ability. So for example, in tea, we are the market leaders on e-com. So therefore, the strong hypothesis that if we get our distribution in place, there's no reason we should not be closing the gap on market share, right? But to your point, after we launch online, we do have to make tweaks. And let me give you the example of dry fruits. Dry fruits was off to a very, very strong launch online. We started hitting about 50 to 70 crores annual run rate, if I may. That's the terminology which the online guys use, right? ARR. And then we said, okay, it's got legs to go offline. As we went offline, we figured out we've got to make two tweaks to our packaging. It's very nice to sell a product simply with pictures and then deliver it at home. But when people, consumers actually shop offline, they want to look at the product, and therefore there has to be a see-through window on the packaging. And the second thing is the package cannot lie flat, which is the way we were designed the package. It has to be a stand-up pouch. So right now we're in the middle of modifying the package, because we did a trial in very limited markets in GT/MT, and we could get in dry fruits because by now everyone knows Sampann dry fruits available online. But unless we make this modification to our packaging, we can't get going. So you're right, we will launch products online, we will see the acceptability, and if we find enough legs, we will go offline. But as we go offline, I think we will have to make tweaks to our product, packaging, pricing strategies.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Mihir Shah from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question, and congrats on a very good set of numbers. Sir, if you can talk about the timing and the synergy benefits from the amalgamation of NourishCo Soulful and Smart Foods, and kind of any quantification, ballpark quantification impact that we can see on margins on the back of that, sir.
So these companies are already consolidated, right? So basically their larger objective is simplification. There will be some amount of rationalizing the support costs because of combining entities. But in business, not very significant benefits. There will be, however, some benefit on account of GST, more cash, little bit P&L, because for us we have an inverted duty structure. That means, you know, our input costs are higher in terms of than the output GST, whereas for the other companies it's reverse. So we'll have some cash flow and a little bit of P&L benefit, not significant. In addition, because of carry forward loss, we'll be able to absorb some of the losses of these companies, which will give us a benefit on the tax line. Again, it will be overall a number of all things put together would be in the range between 50 to 100 crores, somewhere in between. All things considered, some of it cash flow, some of it P&L.
Got it. Thank you for that. So my second question is on margins. When we see the international margins on a sequential basis, you know, they appear to be down, while on a YOY there's still an expansion. So how should we think about international margins from here on? Was it seasonality? Second subpart is on the India margins again. You know, they appear to be lower largely. Is it a function of higher ad spends or anything else, you know, would be pulling down India margins, you know, tad bit? And lastly, on the non-branded margins, it appears to be higher than the branded ones. If you can share, how should we think about that as well?
So I'll start with the non-branded margins first. Non-branded margins is primarily a factor of coffee prices and great performance by our Vietnam business on the price mix. I mean, there's no capacity changes. It is just that we played the right game on the price customer slash price mix out of Vietnam, and that's why the margins look better. I think they will continue to be in a decent range going forward, because the focus on making sure that we derive value out of all our investments has come in. That's number one. Number two, on the international piece or the India piece per se, you have to remember two things. We have seasonality in our businesses, especially for tea and coffee, more tea than coffee. For international, I would urge you to look at year on year and not quarter on quarter, because there will be changes that we will do in especially on A&P, etc. This quarter we have spent higher, and why have we spent higher? Because we rejigged our entire packaging with our investments into the Eaglescliffe factory. We came out with the most sustainable Tetley pack. We took some time to get it into the trade. We took pricing to make sure it stabilized, and after it has stabilized, now we have put A&P behind it. Apart from that, we are expanding distribution, which as you realize in international market does require listing fees, etc. Prudent. Our Good Earth, for example, which we were only piloting in Sainsbury's, now we have decided to take it across and we are now entering multiple geographies. We have launched Joyful in Tesco, there's initial activation fees, etc. So therefore, I would urge you to look at year on year and not quarter to quarter. That's number one. In the India business, we do not look at it again similarly on quarter to quarter, because the tea business in India, you do realize, is highly seasonal. The north kicks in Q3, more in Q4. And tea prices are dramatically different on what you buy in Q1 versus Q4. So this will go up and down. The balance businesses will more or less remain steady. There will be a little bit of cost movement here and there, as for example, we've invested ahead of the curve on sales and distribution in splitting the routes and putting the distributors in all 50,000 plus towns, which in my mind is the right thing to do, because it's not watching out for a quarter to quarter, but as you build out the distribution system for the long run, this is the right thing to do.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Arnab Mitra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My first question was on the Sampann. 47% growth seems to have stepped up and also higher than your normal 30% range. So is there a significant pricing step up due to commodity, underlying commodity here? And also, if you could help us understand how much of the volume growth is being driven by incremental distribution and addition of new segments outside the pulses. If you could just give us some flavor on both of those other than pricing.
So let me answer your second question first. Is the whole premise of doing split routes in the million plus towns was the fact that we thought there was a bandwidth release which was needed at the front end, and if we did that, we would get growth. So whether it is in beverages or it is in foods, we are seeing incremental growth in the split routes rather than the non-split routes. So that's number one. Number two, Sampann growth, that is why we have constantly guided for a 30% growth in the medium term. This quarter, I think we have delivered beyond that on the base business, as well as there is some inflation effect, especially in the areas of pulses, etc. But while we will continue to push the needle to the maximum, longer term, we do stay committed to the 30% growth for Sampann.
And is there a significant or a significantly increasing contribution from the newer segments like dry fruits and others, or they are still very small in the mix in Sampann?
So right now they are small, because the big pieces in Sampann, if I look at it, it is pulses, besans, spices, and then we've got all the other new categories. But do realize that the new categories have just got launched probably in the last 12, 18, 24 months per se, and it takes time to build up. So whichever category we are entering, we are confident that the categories are large, because let me put it this way, the expansion is not a mindless expansion. It is a roadmap drawn out about 2 years back of which categories we should enter and what size they will get to. A and B, the reason why we get into those categories is specifically because we've got we've got a specific target, we've got ability to create a difference, there is a trust deficit in that category, and therefore we'll be able to get a decent market share.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sheila Rathi from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. Hi, Sunil. So my first question was, again, with respect to the growth businesses. So if I see from F22 to F24, we have almost doubled the share of growth businesses from, 10% to 18% now. So Sunil, should we see a similar trajectory to play out, say, in the next 2 years, that, the share of these businesses could be circa, 40% or say 50% in the next 3 years?
So thanks, Sheila. So fundamentally, we have said Tata Consumer will deliver double-digit growth and EBITDA ahead of that double-digit growth, right? So if I peel back, if I take my base categories of tea and salt, we've always said mid-single-digit volume and a few basis points on that of price, which will not get me to the double-digit growth. And therefore, the growth businesses have to be delivering substantially more than the base businesses. All I can say is I think we've made our aspirations for this year at least very clear. With Sampann, 900 crore-1,000 crore. For NourishCo, we've already said the aspirational target for this year is 1,000 crore, and we do seem to be on track to deliver that. Soulfull is on a very strong trajectory. We are moving from now breakfast into the larger snacking occasions, which should deliver us more. So yes, the short answer to your question is I think you will see substantially faster growth in the growth businesses compared to our base business.
Sure. And the second part to the same question is, how should we think about the growth businesses in terms of, say, you talked about tea, we are more on the mass and mass premium side, mid-premium side. How would you categorize your growth businesses? Will it be mid-premium or premium, or will there be a share of mass in this growth business also because we are also doing pulses?
So Sheila, I would split the businesses and talk about it. So if I talk about Soulfull, I would say it is mass premium to premium. If I talk about NourishCo, it is more, I would say, 90% mass and 10% premium because we do have Himalayan out there. We've launched Himalayan Saffron. We've launched ready-to-drink coffee, which is again premium this thing. But as a percentage of the mix, it will be relatively smaller. Sampann largely would be a mass. But again, I would put a fine rider out there. In whichever category we play, we do command a premium on the base portfolio. For example, our pulses would be roughly a 10%-15% premium over every regional competitor, if I may. Similarly, our spices would be benchmarked to the national players and more or less in that ballpark on the pricing. So it depends by category is where we've defined. And even within that category, it depends on who is the benchmark and what are we going for. The big play would be Sampann. The big play would be the NourishCo mass. These would be probably, like I said, Sampann would be a 10%-15% if you take pulses. NourishCo would be in the mass pricing range.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll just go to the webcast for a question, and then we can come back if that's okay. Yeah. So Sunil, there is a question from Saurabh Patwa Quest. He's asking for Sampann, which started with pulses, basil, etc. Incrementally, we seem to be moving towards ready-to-cook products like vermicelli, tea mixes, etc., and high-value trust-deficit categories like dry fruit saffron. What is the strategy moving towards higher-margin products given the distribution and brand awareness is being established over the last few years? Also, on saffron, we launched one in Sampann as well as Himalayan. Is there a change in strategy on both the products strategy, or both the products can coexist as premium and super premium?
So let me put it this way. Like I mentioned earlier, it is not that this is not we're thinking on our feet. This is a roadmap drawn out on which categories we are going to enter. We drew it up about 24 months back. Every category was defined in size of category, margins, right to succeed. Do we have the differentiation in ability to differentiate the product itself? Is it trust deficit? Because the Tata brand name does magic in trust deficit categories. So all the launches that you see are the result of that roadmap which is drawn. There would be products which would be high margin. There would be products. Each of these categories has a role to play in our portfolio. There would be some which will drive for volume. There's some which will drive for margin. And of course, there will be some which will drive for imagery. So there is a roadmap, and we are following that roadmap. The answer to the saffron question is yes, we did launch saffron under Himalayan. This is saffron from Kashmir. It is accompanied. Every single pack is accompanied by a QR code which gives you the authenticity of the saffron which was sourced. but that is at the very, very high end. Sampann is more or less, as I just mentioned, is a mass premium sort of brand, and therefore we do think Saffron, given that it is a high trust deficit category, high margin, high value category, we can make a play in that, and that's why we've launched Sampann out there. We do think both the brands can play in the same space over a period of time.
Thank you. Moderator, we can go back to the Q&A queue, please, and just take one last question perhaps given the time.
Sure. We have a last question from the line of Sumant Kumar from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Can you talk about Marisco channel expansion and key estates expansion we have recently done?
Sorry, this is Marisco is, as I said, geographical and portfolio expansion. In geographical expansion, we've got about 44 plants, if I'm not mistaken. Right now, we cover about 650,000 outlets. Just as a perspective, the large players, I would say between 4 to 5 million easily. Therefore, while we have put up the geographical footprint in terms of manufacturing, we've still got a long way to go in terms of distribution, and that remains the opportunity. As we build out our distribution, adding to the portfolio and strengthening our depth in the outlet is another opportunity, and that's why you would see us testing out energy drinks or sports drinks.
Okay. In the food category, we have seen our product launches strategy is majorly focused towards a premium product. So do we have a strategy to launch or planning to launch to mid to mass segment also going forward?
So Sumant, I would launch products where I can make money, as simple as that, right? I would be very happy to launch high volume and high margin products, but I would struggle to find them. So like I said, we've looked at the entire food and beverage space, looked at where are the spaces where we can create meaningful scale and make money there. And that is the play that you are seeing play out.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Nidhi Verma for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you everyone for joining us, and thank you ICICI Securities for hosting us. In case there are further pending questions, you can reach out to us. Our contact details are mentioned in the investor deck. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.